The UFC fighter's Obama slur story and Vance's response, calling the backlash disproportionate, is a window into how the administration consistently handles these moments. The pattern is to treat the criticism of inflammatory language as itself a form of political overreach, rather than engaging with the substance of whether the language was appropriate. It's a rhetorical posture that has proven effective at energizing a base that feels it has been lectured to by cultural institutions.
Warren Buffett's comments are fascinating to me from a market psychology perspective. He's calling finding investment value tough and describing markets as increasingly turning to gambling. At 95 years old, Buffett has seen enough market cycles to distinguish between different market regimes. His observation connects to his decision to cut donations to the Gates Foundation after publicly calling Bill Gates's ties to Jeffrey Epstein distasteful. There's a morality thread running through Buffett's public comments lately that's worth tracking.
FBI Director Patel offering to give names in the Epstein clash is the latest episode in the long-running drama about Epstein's associates. The FBI's posture under Patel has been notably different from prior FBI leadership on this issue. Whether this produces actual disclosures or remains performative remains genuinely unclear. The FBI's crystal substance discovery in the van from the Houston ICE shooting is a separate investigative thread that adds complexity to that story.
The Buffett-Gates-Epstein dynamic is also a business story in the sense that it has real implications for the Gates Foundation's philanthropic reach. Buffett has been the foundation's largest external donor, contributing tens of billions over two decades. A reduction in those contributions, motivated by his distaste for Gates's Epstein associations, would materially affect the foundation's global health and development programs.
The shareholder lawsuit against the Ellisons over an alleged Trump deal for the Warner Bros. Discovery merger touches the uncomfortable intersection of political relationship and corporate governance. When controlling shareholders have direct relationships with the sitting president that may influence major corporate transactions, minority shareholders have a legitimate interest in knowing whether those relationships affected the terms they received.
California's audit of billionaires who fled the proposed wealth tax is a story with real teeth. The Franchise Tax Board scrutinizing whether Sergey Brin and David Sachs truly severed California ties after relocating is not a symbolic exercise. California's residency rules are detailed, and the state has won these cases before against high-income taxpayers who claimed to have moved but maintained substantial California connections. The amounts involved for someone like Brin would be enormous.
All right, and now I want to open up the "what if we're wrong" conversation, because I think the Iran Air campaign story demands it. The dominant assumption running through virtually all the mainstream coverage of the U.S. strikes is that they are systematically degrading Iran's military capacity and that this degradation will eventually produce a political change in Iranian behavior. That is the theory of the case. Let's challenge it seriously.
I'll play the skeptic here, Marcus, because I think the skeptical case is genuinely strong. The core assumption is that Iran's military capacity is the binding constraint on its behavior. But what if the binding constraint is actually something different? The Iranian government's internal political legitimacy, its relationship with the Revolutionary Guards, its factional dynamics. Air campaigns can destroy physical infrastructure, but they have a poor track record of changing the political calculations of authoritarian governments facing existential threats. In fact, the research literature on bombing campaigns and government capitulation suggests that external attack frequently strengthens the nationalist basis of regime support.
The counterargument is that this situation is different because of the naval blockade. It's not just kinetic pressure, it's economic pressure applied through denial of oil export revenue, which is the Iranian government's primary source of funding for the Revolutionary Guard and its proxy networks. The combination of strikes and blockade, the argument goes, is more comprehensive than any previous pressure campaign.
That's the strongest version of the administration's case. But here's what would need to be true for it to work. Iran would need to have no meaningful workarounds for the blockade, no ability to export through alternative routes, no accumulated reserves, no support from countries like China or Russia that have an interest in keeping Iranian oil flowing. And the Iranian political leadership would need to assess the costs of continued confrontation as exceeding the costs of making the concessions Washington is demanding. Neither of those conditions is obviously met right now.
So what would we watch for if this assumption is wrong? Three signals. First, if oil is continuing to flow, if tanker traffic data or satellite imagery of Iranian ports shows export activity continuing despite the blockade, that tells you the economic pressure isn't working as advertised. Second, if the Iranian factional response to the strikes is actually consolidating hardliner power rather than empowering moderates, that's evidence the political dynamic is moving in the wrong direction for Washington's purposes. And third, if regional allies who have been quietly supportive of the pressure campaign, Gulf states for instance, start creating back channels for Iran to access revenues, that's a sign the coalition behind the blockade has more cracks than the public posture suggests.
Esper is essentially making this argument from the outside. The fact that a former defense secretary is publicly stating that air power alone will not change Tehran's behavior at the Aspen Security Forum, in front of exactly the audience that shapes policy, suggests these doubts are not fringe concerns. They are being voiced by serious people with serious credentials, and that deserves more weight in the public conversation than it's currently getting.